Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are going to spend the next bit of our program here talking about the latest news coming around the suits with Hopkins and Kennedy Krieger and Lead Paint. We are going to begin with talking with Billy Murphy, William Murphy Jr., of course, founder and senior partner of Murphy Falcon and Murphy in Baltimore. Their firm has been leading a leader in this world of suits around this issue. We're also in the studio, but this is Dr. Raymond Winbush. Ray Winbush, director of the Institute for Urban Research at Morgan State University. Billy, welcome back to the show, man. Good to have you with us.
Thank you, Mark. Nice to be here.
So talk a bit about where we are now with these suits. In our conversation yesterday, I'll bring up some of the things you and I talked about, but the Sun had a front page story over the weekend. And you are a lead attorney in this one suit, new suit coming up. Describe who this is, what happened, and what's going on with this suit.
Well, the suit that's going to be coming up in the fall involves a young man who's now 20 years old who was born in a lead paint house leased by Kennedy Krieger through City Houses, City Homes, to a mother who thought it was lead safe. And she thought it was lead safe because both City Homes and Kennedy Krieger didn't tell her that it was only a partial abatement and that her child would be the measuring rod, the guinea pig, to determine whether there was still lead in the house after a very, very inexpensive partial abatement.
Now, the young man in question, who is your client, is now in prison, right?
Yes.
And I've been reading a lot of articles over the last 24 hours about the connection that many people have made that we don't hear a great deal about. Mother Jones wrote a whole series on this a few years back that I was rereading. There's all these studies showing a deep connection between the spike in violence in our society, the numbers of people committing violent crimes, and lead paint poisoning.
Well, there is a lot of science and quasi-science on the question of whether lead paint poisoning makes people more predisposed to crime. And I think that what you can say emphatically is that lead paint poisoning ruins the brain, and it prevents children from being able to learn. It slows them down. It puts them behind everyone in their social group and everyone else in society. And so what we do know is that kids who have these damaged brains from lead paint poisoning develop lifelong frustrations that they cannot compete with the other kids, that they are not as smart as the other kids. They have lower IQs, lower classroom performance than the other kids. And, of course, that's a setup for involvement in the things that you can do. And one of the things that you can do is crime.
So, I want to go back to something you said earlier, and I ask Ray Winbush to jump in with any questions or thoughts he has as well as he joins us for these conversations during the rest of the hour here. The question I posed to you yesterday on the phone, Billy Murphy, was whether Hopkins knowingly allowed young people to be poisoned by lead. This is at the crux of the issue, whether it was, I mean, they knew how much lead was in the houses, how deeply it might damage people in those homes or not. Isn't this at the crux of all this? I mean, has anybody ever really been able to answer that question?
Oh, that question's been answered 16 ways from Sunday. There's no question that Kennedy Krieger knew what it was doing. There's no question that Kennedy Krieger knew that it had not gotten all of the lead out of the houses. There's no question that Kennedy Krieger misled the parents of these kids by calling these houses lead safe when they weren't. There's no question that Kennedy Krieger did not follow the standards for lead abatement that existed in Baltimore at the time. They knowingly followed lower standards. This was an experiment. It was an experiment to determine whether or not, by following less than the prescribed legal standards, you could get a reasonable amount of abatement in a house on the cheap. And they had done studies before they did this experiment that showed that you couldn't. They were advocates of full abatement. And so when they did this this particular experiment, these kids were guinea pigs. The only way they could measure whether or not these lower-cost abatement methods would actually work was by putting the kids in the house and measuring their lead levels.
Exactly.
Now, what's that sound like?
Billy, I couldn't agree with everything you said. Is just absolutely true. And if you look at it, Billy, I'm sure you know, this happened over a period of 6 years. I mean, this wasn't happening like for 4 months or 2 months. This was for 6 years. The only other experiment that I know involving African-American children like this are the Tuskegee syphilis experiments back in the 1930s and 40s. So, you know, to argue that Kennedy Krieger didn't know, to argue that Kennedy Krieger might have known, this was clearly an experiment. And the, like, as you say, the guinea pigs were black children.
And how could they not know, Mark? I mean, that's the question.
Yeah.
This is a premier research institution. They were experts in lead paint and lead paint poisoning. How could they not know that they were putting these kids in homes that were less than fully abated? That was the experiment.
Exactly.
Let me explain in a little bit more detail.
Please do.
There was one control, and that was houses that had no lead paint in them at all. In other words, houses built after 1972, 73, something like that. And so Hopkins had studied the impact of external lead from air and dust and this, that, and the other on kids in non-lead paint homes and found that it was insignificant. Now they said, well, let's do this. Let's put kids in four other kinds of homes. Let's put kids in homes that had been abated in accordance with law. And they'd already done studies to show that after about 3 or 4 years, maybe after 1 or 2 in some cases, the lead comes back after it's been fully abated in accordance with law. So they put kids in those homes. And their data shows that the lead came back and that these kids were poisoned in homes that were fully abated. Then they put in what they call the El Cheapo abatement, $7,500, $5,000, $1,750. And they put kids in those homes. And they said, this experiment is to determine the impact of low-cost, less than fully legally required abatement on the health of children. And as predicted, these kids got lead paint poisoned.
That's right.
So what is there for Hopkins not to know? I mean, Kennedy Krieger not to know. What is there? I mean, a dummy would know this. And so the only way that they could pull this off was by misinforming the parents that they were putting their children in lead-safe homes.
And see, Billy, you know, when I came to Baltimore, I knew absolutely zero about lead poisoning. I came here from Nashville, and Nashville's an old city, but the houses are all new. And I didn't think and didn't know how political the issue of lead poisoning was in Baltimore, that you can see everybody in bed with each other. I don't want to say literally, but they're in bed in terms of developers, researchers, a variety of people who have a vested interest in making sure that homes in this city get minimal amount of lead abatement. And it's a political issue. It's clearly a medical issue, and it's clearly an unethical issue. But it's also a very, very political issue in this city.
It really is. And I'll give you another reason why we know Hopkins or KKI knew. I keep conflating them like they're the same. They're very closely related, but they're not the same. These kids' lead levels were regularly measured after they were put in these homes, Mark.
That's right.
And in the case of the young man we're representing in the fall, and I'm deliberately not saying his name.
Okay.
His lead levels were measured every 6 months, and they showed an increase. He was born in that house. You know, the evidence will show that Kennedy Krieger preferred these kids to be young enough to crawl on the floor and have hand-to-mouth movements, because that would be the only way they could adequately test whether or not these abatement, these less-than-optimal abatement techniques worked. And so they preferred kids in the six-month to five-year range, toddlers on down to crawlers. Mm-hmm. And they preferred if they could get them, pregnant women to move into these houses so that their kids would be born without having been exposed to lead from any other source. And that way they could more accurately measure the lead levels.
Right.
Now, I would say up here again that we did ask Kenneth Krieger to come on, and we asked people to join this conversation as well who defended Kennedy Krieger in the work that they did, but Kennedy Krieger would not come on and declined to come on, I should say, and the other people could not join us for today's program. We did try to have an overarching program that had all thoughts on here, but one of the things that some papers said was that that over the years, I'll read this, Kennedy Krieger and others have defended the study, which was funded by the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Brian Stark, Assistant Vice President for Kennedy Krieger, declined to comment but said that the study was a sincere and productive effort to find solutions to a public health epidemic gripping Baltimore and cities across the nation at that time. And that the outgrowth of that study was that they found out what was going on and led to the abatement. So how do we respond to that?
Well, I don't understand what that means, Mark.
Me either.
Do you understand what that means?
I don't.
What does it mean?
And you know something, Billy, let me say this real quick. This is eerily like the same language that was said in the decisions relative to, the Tuskegee experiments years ago. And it's interesting that the Maryland Court of Appeals likened these experiments to the Tuskegee experiment. It's almost like saying, well, let's expose these black kids to lead. We'll do it systematically over a long period of time. And, you know, whatever happens to them is irrelevant. We've got better information about lead poisoning. Well, you know, they're victims of this stuff. You know, Mengele said the same thing in the death chambers in Auschwitz. He said the exact same thing. So, you know, you don't use human beings as guinea pigs. You don't do that.
That's the point. You can't use any little kids. You can't use any human beings for guinea pigs, especially here where there was no therapeutic benefit to the kids from being
That's
in
right.
the study in the first place.
That's right.
They weren't even being treated for lead paint poisoning. And so in the case of the kid whose trial is coming up in October, lead paint poisoning was permitted to go on, and all they did with this kid was measure it as it was happening.
That's
like being a lab rat, isn't it?
That is like being a lab rat, and I think that.
So they had a lead treatment clinic. The clinic was one of the ways that these kids' blood was being measured, but yet when the blood levels got over 10, which was the standard at the time, and they went as high as 22 for this kid, nobody did anything. And what you're supposed to do is immediately determine what the source of the lead poisoning is and get rid of the source. Move the kid out of the house. Find a safe place for him to live. But no, that would have defeated the point of the experiment.
That's right.
And so they didn't remove these kids. It's horrible. Now, who were the people who did it? Well-intended people. But in the course of this experiment over 6 years, they didn't give a damn about these young kids.
That's right.
They didn't give a damn. This is a classic, we're going to experiment on these kids who are going to be lead paint poisoned anyway because they live in Baltimore for the greater good of society.
That's right.
Give me a break.
Right.
We can permit that in this century? Come on.
And Billy Murphy, I know you have to run at this moment. I know, but this is really important for us to hear what's going on from your perspective and the kind of work you're doing, and many of us deeply appreciate it. I have to be very clear here. My producer just chatted me. Dr. Johnson was quoted in the article, was unavailable, and the institute itself said they could not comment with legal issues pending. That was said to us. Billy Murphy, we'll be talking to you about this more as this develops, and clearly in October. And we thank you so much again for taking your time out of your busy schedule for this morning.
Well, thank you very much.
Take care, Billy.
Bye now.
So that was Billy Murphy, whose firm is leading the case. And, of course, he's one of Baltimore's leading attorneys, former judge, former candidate for mayor. And I should say, as a point of full disclosure, that Billy Murphy and I have known each other for a lifetime, and that I was his campaign manager when he ran for mayor in 1983, as full disclosure, put that out there so there's no kind of people saying, oh, no, yes, well, that's the reality. But I'm going to let you know that. We are going to go to break here with a really interesting quote. Is that what's being queued up? Am I right? And former slave, Fontaine Hughes, who lived in Baltimore. This interview was recorded in 1949 and was conducted by Library of Congress engineer Herman Norwood on June 11, 1949. Hughes was born in Charlottesville, Virginia in 1848, but lived in Baltimore, and was the grandson of a slave who was owned by Thomas Jefferson. And this is part of the larger slave narrative collection. We thought in our Friday in History we'd leave you with this short piece. We'll be right back with the rest of our guests as we continue our conversation around lead paint.
My name is Fountain Hughes. I was born in Charlottesville, Virginia. My grandfather belonged to Thomas Jefferson. My grandfather was 115 years old when he died. And now I am 101 years old.
Just meant for two, from which I'll never roam. Who would you? And so all else above, I'm waiting for the man.
Coming back here now with Hazel Scott, Rhapsody in Blues. She was born on this day. She was one of our great singers. So as part of our day in history, we remember the great Hazel Scott. Reminding you on the way to this conversation, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. We continue our conversation. Dr. Ray Winbush remains in the studio, director of the Institute for Urban Research here at Morgan State University. We are joined by phone by Dr. Jerry Markowitz, distinguished professor at the John Jay School of Criminal Justice at the City University of New York, co-author of the book with David Rosner, Lead Wars, The Politics of Science and the Fate of America's Children. Dr. Crystal Brenzook, who is award-winning journalist, director of the MA Journalism Program at Hofstra University, and author of Black Women's Lives, Stories of Power and Pain, which contains a chapter about Lynn Battle, a lead poisoning activist in Anniston, Alabama. She can be found at crystalbrentzook.com and tweets at Crystal Zook. We'll have all that on our webpage. Dr. David Buchanan, professor and director of the Institute for Global Health at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, co-author of Justice and Fairness in the Kennedy Krieger Institute Lead Paint Study, The Ethics of Public Health Research on Less Expensive, Less Effective Interventions. And folks, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
It's nice to be with you.
Hi.
Good to be here.
Good morning, yes.
Good morning. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at SteinerShow at gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages or tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888, quote Mark with a C. And we also have people calling in. We'll get to the Reverend Dakina Pata, who's online holding. We'll get to your call in a moment, 410-319-8888. So that continuing this study, I mean, this is continuing this conversation. I mean, it's about Kennedy Krieger, but it's about more than Kennedy Krieger. It's about what lead paint has done to children across America. And I think and that's really part of this as well. I was reading this article earlier this morning about the six studies where most lead is contained and the levels of lead paint poisoning and the connections to kids becoming uncontrolled, the behavior becoming uncontrolled because they're very frustrated with their existence. They end up filling up prisons. It's tied directly to the incarceration of the mass incarceration of people. It's hard to unlink these things. But so Dr. Crystal Brenzook, could you start off just by giving us that kind of that perspective?
Sure, yeah. I wrote about Lynn Battle, who's a community activist in Anniston, Alabama, because she was, working tirelessly in her community to educate people about lead poisoning and children. And the statistics were just staggering. I had no idea. Black children had, my book was in 2006, and at this time, black children had lead levels 80% higher than those of other children. They were five times more at risk than white children. And interestingly, poor children were eight times more at risk, poor children of all races, and that's because of the amount of lead paint in public housing projects that was mandated. There was lead paint surplus after World War II, so the government mandated it to be used in public housing projects. So there's a long history of exposure to, kids are more vulnerable, so we mostly talk about children who eat it and they lick their fingers and it tastes good. And it's just, an incredibly sad story, not only this recent case, but children all across America who are not even diagnosed. Sometimes they may be diagnosed with ADD, but there's no consciousness that this is actually connected to lead poisoning. And in fact, the homes built before 1980, the vast majority of all homes still have lead paint in them. So once those walls start cracking or they do reconstruction, kids are at risk.
And I wanted you to rate that, Crystal Brunswick, because I think that it's important to take the larger context here. I mean, there's an issue here in Baltimore, Kennedy Krieger, which we'll continue to talk about. But this is a larger question of what happens to children around the country.
Right.
That's beyond just one institution in Baltimore City.
Right, right. And it's, you know, we're talking about learning disabilities, behavioral problems, aggression, hyperactivity. One expert explained it to me as it affects the frontal lobe in the brain, which is the part of the brain that says, don't do this, don't do that. So you have these behavioral problems that do lead in some cases, to criminal activity. And that's why so many people have made the connection between incarceration rates and poor kids, you know, being exposed to lead at a very young age and never being diagnosed. So it's really, I think, an underexplored topic even today, even after we know so much about it. It's still not high in the consciousness of the population.
And I, Jerry Markowitz, one of the things I've tried to do over the years with school officials around the country and the cities is to talk to them about is when we have these high levels of lead paint poisoning in our children, why are we not taking that to account when we teach our children? And nobody can ever kind of answer that question straight because this is difficult. People don't want to put their hands around it because of its difficulty. Jerry Markowitz?
Well, I think that it's important, as you point out, to have this larger perspective because lead poisoning is totally preventable. We've known how to prevent lead poisoning for a century, and that is remove lead from a child's environment. And it's unconscionable that today there are 500,000 children who are exposed to excess levels of lead in their blood, and they are predominantly children of color and poor children. And this is a real horrible societal problem that we are simply not willing to spend the money to remove lead from a child's environment, which is overwhelmingly means their home.
And before I turn to David Buchanan, Ray, I mean, what we just heard our first two guests say here, Jerry Markowitz and Dr. Zook, that's precisely part of the problem. Is that especially, I think, when it happens in the poor children and specifically communities of color and black children, that we cannot find the money.
Well, you know, I always say, Tracy Rohn, one of my colleagues here at Morgan, and I published a study a few years ago about, you know, lead. And if you were to name, as you know, the guest just said, if you were to name, like, what are the top five issues in Baltimore, they would say crime, drugs, education, and so forth. But right. Nobody says lead. And the thing about ironic is the guest just said, that is probably leading and connected to the matrix of the problems that we see in places like Baltimore. And black and Latino kids, to a lesser degree, are exposed to these at enormous rates higher than white children. But we don't want to talk about it because it's a big problem, and we prefer to talk about the offshoots of it.
And so, Dr. Buchanan, let me bring you into the conversation, David Buchanan. So, so would you bring this all back to your research and work on the question of ethics and all this when it deals with Kennedy Krieger? What are some of the stories that we're not really talking about in depth here about this?
Well, I think the key issue here is that, as the other speakers have suggested, that we've known about this problem for a long time, and as the speaker just mentioned, that it is relatively expensive. As a society, there are always limited resources, and so from a research perspective, you're trying to find ways that can achieve the same goals that are less expensive. And that's what I think that the Kennedy Krieger Institute was trying to do, is recognizing that, you know, lead has been banned since 1950, yet we still have 500,000 children exposed to these things. What do we do? Do we just stand by and wait for the political will, or do we try and find other ways that we can achieve the same goals? And that's what I think Kennedy Krieger was all about.
I have some other kind of pointed questions about this, things we don't know that have been raised, and see what you all think. Let me go to the phones here and get our listeners' thoughts at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. 410-319-8888. The Reverend Ike Napata, you're on the air.
Yeah, God bless you, Mark, for having this discussion and having Attorney Murphy, who represented me on numerous occasions as an activist, along with Harold Buckman, the great civil rights lawyer, who is more than Jewish. He would have rather meant to be Jewish, be concerned about his brothers and sisters. So having said that, I thank you so much for having this discussion, because as a youngster, I and my youngster, brothers and siblings, we ate the chips on the windowsill and were diagnosed with lead thing. This is in the 50s. And all I'm saying is that one thing I think is so important in this discussion is, even as we identify, in quotes, the victims, which are not just the children, but which are the families and communities, that we not, as we talk about these persons victimized by Kennedy Krieger or John Hopkins or absentee landlords, for that matter of fact, that we not lock them and freeze them into some type of victimhood where they can't grow out of it. Because there are too many schools and programs that accompany, even with the suits, you're asking for damages to give relief. And so all I'm saying is that in this discussion at an educational institution of experts like Morgan, that we widen that lens so that we don't have them frozen in time and in victimhood. I just want to say it because I am, and not only have been a victim, but I've been delivered from that because of spiritual things and other, including education and Morgan. So having said that, one last thing.
Yeah.
Is I believe that when we talk about pointing the fingers of blame, we don't just focus at Hopkins or Kennedy Krieger. And I sued the University of Maryland Medical System Freedom of Information Act. And I think a similar thing can be done with Hopkins to talk about how do we expose the real information that is before us, whether it's around using the cancer cells of a black woman and a corporation
right.
profit and her family as a profit. I just think that at an institution like Morgan, having this profound radio program, that with Dr. Wimbush there, that when we talk about widening the lens and talk about poverty being a part of that whole scenario that not only abuses youngsters but continues that, absentee landlords, right. and the history of that, there were Jewish landlords and Gentile landlords.
And black landlords, I want to add. I can name five of them off the top of my head.
There were landlords,
period, who owned slums in the city.
All I'm saying is that when we talk
right.
about reparations for those aggrievements, right, and talk about equal protection under the law, all I'm saying is there is a systematic continuum that continues. The mayor had just decided on June the 6th, because of so-called deficits, to sell to the private community all kinds of public property.
We have a lot of callers, so I have to get to some of the other people, but... I deeply appreciate you every time you call in because you add so much to our discussions, but we have limited time. So before we get to our other callers, I want to come to ask a question because I think that the main things like he said was right, and it is a much larger piece, and we do have to wrestle all those pieces. But I why has it been so difficult? I don't know who can answer this question. In terms of class action suits, to go after the lead paint companies themselves, when other pieces I've read have made it clear that at least it seems to make it clear, or alleges to make it clear, alleges that lead paint companies were aware of the dangers, but the same way class action suits are brought against tobacco, why has it been so difficult to bring these cases against the companies themselves?
Well, before I get to why it's difficult, we have won a tremendous lawsuit in California, where 10 counties and cities in California held three lead pigment manufacturers responsible, and they got a $1.1 billion of verdict to clean up the lead in those 10 cities and counties. That is a tremendous victory, and you hope that victory will let other cities and counties and states take the same kind of action, because we can remove the lead from the homes of children all across America. There is no technological reason why we can't do that. But we need the will and we need the money. And the companies that have benefited from selling this lead and poisoning these children, this is blood money that they have had. That should be part of the solution to this problem.
Please go ahead.
I actually quote Dr. Markowitz and Dr. Rosner in my book, where they say that that the story of lead paint is that of a guerrilla war fought by a small group of individuals against giant lead corporations.
That's right.
And, you know, the woman that I profiled, Lynn Battle, is one of those individuals in Anniston, Alabama. She was just on her own, finding families, taking them to the doctor, seeing who had been diagnosed incorrectly and diagnosing them correctly with lead, and then figuring out how to move them out of their homes. You know, this is an extraordinarily expensive and complicated public health issue that is sort of masked as a housing issue. So which government agency is responsible? Which, you know, where do you go if the corporations themselves aren't actually taking responsibility?
Let me add, I got to put this in too. Claire Patterson, you should read his history.
Who?
Claire Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, in his recent or current Cosmos series, did an entire segment on how the lead industry way back when, 50 years, 60 years ago, very much involved with making sure that lead was in paint, even though they knew it was hazardous. But Google him, C-L-A-I-R Patterson.
Well, do that.
Okay.
That's on my list now. Thank you, Ray.
Okay.
But I think the issue here is that...
Is this Dr. Markowitz or Dr. Buchanan?
It is now banned from
That's
paint.
Dr.
You can't
Buchanan.
Buy paint that has lead in it any longer. It's been, I think, since 1950 or 1970.
Right, right.
And so these are historic residues that have been, you know, houses painted before that time. And so it's very difficult to go back and sue companies, you know, for things that happened 70 years ago. Currently, the issue is there is law, there is legislation that landlords have to clean these things up, and there probably hasn't been able to be a class action suit just because there are so many landlords, you know, both in Baltimore and all across the country, who own various pieces of land that are not being properly abated by law. They are the people who should be held responsible for continuing to rent places that have, illegal housing code violations.
This is one of the reasons I think it calls for something much larger in terms of a societal response and a federal response, which is the only way this is going to be handled is that way, I think, for all the ramifications of this. And then Dr. Buchanan, David Buchanan, let me ask you this as well. I'm curious, in all of this, one of the things that we haven't talked about a great deal on the air, at least we haven't done in several years, and I think because of the latest news, it begs to be talked about, which is the ethical questions in terms of research, in terms of biomedical research. What are the ethical questions we think that our public needs to force Kennedy Krieger and other institutions to wrestle with? What are those questions we should be raising? What should they have to wrestle with now?
Well, I think that they're kind of, in my mind, two separate sets of issues here. So it seems to me in the specific case of the Kennedy Krieger Institute, again, there are probably some issues with respect to the informed consent process. And then in addition, there are probably some issues that with respect to giving fair warning to the families that their children had unacceptably high lead paint issues. And those are things that are being, you know, discussed in the courts and trying to be settled in the courts, I think, quite properly. Another issue here is, once we find some way of ameliorating some problem, if it is unconsciously expensive, again, there's all kinds of issues all across all levels of our medical care system where there can be extraordinarily expensive interventions. And can we then ethically conduct research in an attempt to find less expensive solutions? And that's what our article is about, is that there have to be very certain specific conditions in when it is acceptable to try and find lower cost solutions to these pressing social problems.
I mean, especially.
Can I just comment on that for 1 second, please?
Jerry Markowitz. Please go ahead.
The problem with lead is that scientists are now finding that there is no safe level of lead. So reducing the amount of lead in a child's environment doesn't protect the child. And that's the real dilemma with lead, is that if you eliminate lead from a child's environment, that child can then be saved from the consequences of lead poisoning. But reducing it is not going to prevent lead poisoning.
And I think one of the things here, I do want to try to get this last caller in here if I can, but both Dr. Zook and Dr. Ray Wimbush, the part of the question here also is that was raised earlier in this program by Billy Murphy. When it comes to ethics and working on trying to find solutions to problems that face the health of our communities, is it the fairness of just studying or healing? Often there are studies because people are easy to study, like caged animals in many ways, but not to be healed. I think Dr. Zook, that's part of the problem here, and not just in Baltimore, but other places as well.
Right, and I think we do have to talk about government responsibility. You know, I agree. I think that studying the problem at this point, when we know that there's no acceptable level, and that a grain the size of a sugar granule can do damage, you know, what else is there to study? But the government's response has been uneven and has really faded since the 1980s, when they sort of decided that, okay, we've seen drastic reductions in lead poisoning among children, which is true, but the majority of cases still out there disproportionately affect minorities and the poor, and they are serious cases. At the time I was writing, only 5 states were even testing school children for lead, mostly in the Northeast, New York, New Jersey, I think Massachusetts, Rhode Island. So what about all the other states? What about all these kids that are having problems of paying attention and learning disabilities? So I think that the EPA and the CDC and even HUD sort of fell down on their promises. They promised to eliminate lead poisoning by the year 2010, I think, and it's absolutely not gone yet.
Ray, a final thought before we have to wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, very quickly, I think that what we've got to do about lead is that, I mean, it's one of the most frustrating issues that I've seen. I think lawsuits like Billy Murphy here locally will help. The one in California that was mentioned earlier definitely help. But I think that we've got to press politicians to look at this as a real issue related to some of the things we talk about, such as crime, such as, quote, learning disabilities and other things like this. And it's hard to get them to do that.
Well, I'm going to thank all of you. This has been, I apologize to anybody we didn't get onto the phones right now, but this conversation got so intense I needed to let people get the information out for all of our listeners across the Maryland, D.C. area and the country and the world. And I want to thank, first of all, Dr. Ray Wimbush for coming in, Director of the Institute for Urban Research here, Dr. Jerry Markowitz, a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice and at CUNY, City University of New York, who wrote the book Lead Wars, The Politics of Science and the Fate of America's Children, Dr. Crystal Brent Zook, award-winning journalist, director of MA Journalism Program at Hofstra, who wrote the book Black Women's Lives, Stories of Power and Pain, that contains a chapter with Lynn Battle, a lead poisoning activist, and Dr. David Buchanan from the Institute for Global Health, University of Mass Amherst, who co-authored the book Justice and Fairness in the Kennedy-Krieger Institute Lead Pain Study, The Ethics of Public Health Research on Less Expensive, Less Effective Interventions, as well as earlier in the program, Billy Murphy, one of the leading attorneys here, former judge who is taking on the case here in Baltimore right now. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And we'll be linking to everybody's websites and their work and books on our website at steinershow.org. We're going to break here with Autumn Leaves by Hazel Scott, with Charles Mingus and Rudy Nichols. I love some Hazel Scott, and this is her birthday. We're playing this on this day in history, our musical breaks. And when we come back, we will be talking to a fascinating woman about her book, The Other Blacklist, by Mary Helen Washington. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Les feuilles mortes seront
je n'ai pas...